Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
You're listening to the Co-Main Event Podcast. And now your hosts, Ben Folks and Chad Dundas.
That's right. You're listening to another episode of the Co-Main Event Mixed Martial Arts Podcast. I'm Chad Dundas. That's Ben Folks. We're both longtime MMA journalists. And for almost the last 12 years, we've been meeting here every week to break down all the action in the wild, weird, and occasionally wonderful world of mixed martial arts. Ben, we had the Super Bowl yesterday. It was a great Super Bowl, I guess, if you love special teams. We went to overtime. The Chiefs got the win. They beat your San Francisco 49ers, which I know probably especially made you feel sad because it meant that I had my best week of the year over on our Patreon gambling segment. And so, I don't know. How was your Super Bowl? How'd your Super Bowl go?
Well, I was pretty much just thrilled with winning the coin toss bet.
Yeah. And then it was purple Gatorade at the end of the game. I don't know if that's what you had, but I did notice it was the purple Gatorade that they dumped there on Andy Reid.
Well, I think I took blue, but I think it was blue/purple on the thing. Maybe because they felt like the colors were too close to that. They didn't want to get into a controversy. So I had it in my head as blue, but I think that for the purposes of the bet, that's still... still counts.
Wow, it sounds to me like you're bending the rules.
I mean, it's what they put on the thing. It says it's a blue/purple.
Okay, well, not where I was looking, but whatever.
The thing to me, I did not realize until afterwards, Jed, did the 49ers fuck up in overtime? They won the coin flip and then opted to get the ball first, which... you know, back in the old just like sudden death days of overtime in the NFL, you'd think like, obviously, yeah, you want the ball. But when each team is guaranteed at least one possession, I saw people saying afterwards, ideally, you'd want to have the ball second so you'd know, do we need a field goal? Can we win with a field goal? Do we need a touchdown? And sure enough, they go down there, they get a field goal with their first possession, and the Chiefs come back, go all the way down and score on them, and it's ball game.
Hmm.
Seems like they kind of done messed it up.
Maybe they did. That's an interesting analytical point. I'm just out here as a bitch-ass casual, you know, watching my first entire NFL game of the year. So I'm not going to get into an analytical conversation about who should have done what. Just, you know, watched Usher, watched the overtime, ate a lot of chicken wings. I had a great time.
I was sitting there thinking to myself, when Usher comes out, are we going to do Confessions Part 2? Mm-hmm. And if so, are we going to do the part where it begins with him getting the phone call, getting the infamous phone call, telling her to put that on everything, thinks that she's messing with him? We didn't get the phone call, but we did a couple verses, couple bars of Confessions.
Didn't it honestly seem like Usher tried to do too much? Like he tried to go through too many of his hits? That's kind of how it felt to me. Like we were just, well, you know, we get a medley. It's usually a medley. We understand that in the Super Bowl halftime show. But this was just like, you know, 5-second snatches. It felt like of just like bang, 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 Usher doing the hits. I was like, slow down, Usher. Let us get into the groove a little bit here before we send Ludacris out there dressed up like a futuristic Viking and we come out on the goddamn roller skates and shit.
Yeah, Chad, this man was out here roller skating.
Yeah,
he was fucking roller skating. did a little like roller skate slide through somebody's legs and stuff. I mean, that's Usher was like, what if we gotta do something special for the halftime? Can't just get up there, sing the songs, do the usual dances, take my shirt off, just all the usual notes. We gotta have something else special. And then it's like he saw a child roller skate past him and it was just like, hold on.
Yeah.
I got it, you guys.
I watched the halftime show with two 11-year-old girls, my daughter and her friend, and I can say they were just savagely burning Usher the whole time. Just like criticism after. I mean, you know, when you try to follow up Rihanna and you got Taylor Swift in attendance, it's going to be tough to impress an 11-year-old girl when you're out there being Usher trying to do your thing. And, you know, they were just like, why is he sweating so much? He's not even pregnant while he's doing this. Just, you know, savage burns. And then things didn't really pick up until Ludacris showed up, at which time my 6-year-old declared, okay, that guy looks awesome, and was into it for the rest of the time. But I don't know. People, the audience at my house was pretty lukewarm there on Usher.
Well, it's a given that one of the reasons you want Luda to show up is to inject a little bit of energy and enthusiasm into the proceedings.
Lil Jon coming in through the crowd like they made him buy a ticket. I don't know. I didn't know what to think about it. But we're burying the lead here. The top line MMA-related headline of the Super Bowl was it seemed like we got punked. The entire MMA community collectively got punked into thinking that the UFC was going to announce the UFC 300 main event during the Super Bowl. There was a Conor McGregor Instagram story. Michael Chiesa got himself into a little bit of hot water. I did see what Jed Goodman over there, the MMA fighting guy, theorizing that they were going to have an announcement that it was going to be McGregor versus Diaz 3 would be the UFC 300 main event, and then nothing happens, which in retrospect, it's the kind of thing that makes you feel a little foolish.
Where did this start?
I think it was the Conor McGregor Instagram story, but I'm not totally sure.
If that's the genesis of the whole thing, if we're still getting played by Conor McGregor on social media, then we have no one but ourselves to blame.
Yeah.
Because I felt like I joined this already in progress. I did not have a chance to trace it back to see who started this idea that there was going to be something going on. Because what would it be? You know the UFC is not shelling out for a Super Bowl ad.
Right.
You know? Like, Dana White's in one, but we're not the UFC. They don't care enough about this stuff to go out there and spend the money to advertise it on the Super Bowl. So I don't know what people thought, how they thought it was going to be mixed in with the Super Bowl. And if it really was just Conor McGregor, then, you know, fool me once and so forth. At this point, we got to know. Just because Conor McGregor says it on social media does not mean that it's true and might, in fact, give you every reason to think it's not true.
Yeah. I did see Ariel Helwani on the MMA Fortnite today talking about how we worked ourselves into a shoot and how it was ridiculous to think even from the start that there would be an announcement during the Super Bowl. Number one, because the Super Bowl is on CBS. So it's not like they're going to take any time to announce an ABC ESPN product UFC 300 main event. And clearly, you know, owing to the last few weeks, we have known that the UFC hasn't really settled on a main event. So it wasn't like they were going to be able to film a multi-million-dollar commercial and just like come in at the last second and be like, oh, you guys got any ad space left that we could get into? Because those Super Bowl ads are sold, you know, months in advance. And so he was just kind of detailing the reasons why it was silly to think that. And, you know, in retrospect, yeah, we got punked. We all got punked by however this rumor got going.
Well, also, the last quote I saw from Dana White about it was that whatever we say about the UFC 300 main event, it could be completely different this time tomorrow. That's how fluid the situation is, essentially. Which leads me to question, aren't you the same guy who was telling us that it was going to blow our minds? Which seems like maybe you said that knowing that you didn't know what it was going to be. You assume that whatever you come up with will blow our minds, which either means you assume our minds are more easily blown, perhaps, than they truly are. Or whatever the UFC comes up with, he's going to insist that it's amazing. And anybody who says otherwise is a goof and an idiot.
Well, he obviously is going to insist that no matter what the main event turns out to be. We did get a question, listener mail question from Scott that I was going to save until listener mail, but we might as well read it now. He says, they're going to announce Leon Edwards versus Bilal Muhammad as the main event of UFC 300, like when you forget Mother's Day until the day of, and then you have to rush to get flowers at Safeway or Walmart, which, you know, clearly they still at this moment don't know. Even today, they don't know what the UFC 300 main event is going to be, which just, as you mentioned, makes it all the more hilarious that we were originally planned or we originally promised a card that was going to blow our minds. It was going to make our brains explode out the top of our heads. It was going to be so awesome. And clearly, you know, 2 months now from the event, they don't know. And they are running out of options rapidly. Also from that, the MMA Fortnite segment that I watched, Ariel Helwani says, it sounds like they're trying to get Khamzat Chimaev involved in something, either Leon Edwards versus Chimaev or DDP versus Chimaev, with a couple of fallbacks being DDP versus Israel Adesanya or Leon Edwards versus Bilal Muhammad. But one of the holdups is we don't know what Chimaev's visa situation is. We don't know if he can fight in the U.S. in time to make this UFC 300 main event. So if you ask me, it's trending more and more toward either we get Dricus du Plessis and Israel Adesanya to agree to do the thing on relatively short notice, or we go ahead with what seemed like the fallback position all along, and that was Leon Edwards versus Bilal Muhammad, which the UFC, for whatever reason, seems hesitant to make, especially as the main event of UFC 300. But the more time that goes on, don't you kind of feel like Edwards versus Muhammad becomes more and more likely, essentially by the minute?
Yeah, probably. You know, I said this before, but where John Jones was talking about being offered a UFC 300 main event spot very recently and that he couldn't quite make it. And if I'm somebody else who is in the vanishingly small list of names that the UFC could get and make it actually feel like a genuinely big deal, and I hear all these other people kind of ruling themselves out, my asking price is only going up, because The closer you get to this thing, the more desperate the situation becomes for you to find somebody, something that is going to make people actually go, okay, holy shit, this is good. Yeah. The more you wait, the longer you wait, the more it's been built up and we've been sitting around waiting to hear what it is, the more disappointing it's going to be if it's something that just feels like, well, this could be the headliner for any old pay-per-view, but is nothing special.
Right. And I mean, they could still pull a rabbit out of their hat. They are still the UFC. They still have amazing market share and buying power in the MMA industry. So they could do something that blows our minds. But the more and more that it goes on, it just seems like that's probably not going to happen. The funniest part to me is, in true UFC style, they have actually made this a big deal. They have actually made the UFC 300 main event announcement a big deal because of the way Dana White promised that it was going to be, and then the ensuing delays and the fact that it's, you know, we've had all these different ideas. He himself has come out and said it's been a nightmare essentially trying to make this thing, and we've had a lot of ins and outs and a lot of different things have changed. So they've made this a point of intrigue in the MMA world, and it would kind of be the most UFC thing in the world if after all of this they were like, yeah, it's Leon Edwards versus Bilal Muhammad, which is essentially what this main event would be if it fell on the calendar on this date and it was any other number UFC event. That's the main event that it would be. I feel like that would be the most 2024 UFC thing to happen.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just a reminder, you're listening to the Co-Main Event Podcast proper. This show drops every Monday afternoon for free in your timelines and podcast libraries. But if you're not satisfied by this, if you need to get an extra taste, you can find us over on Patreon all week, serving out that hot MMA action. We got loads of extra audio and video content, as well as access to the official CME Discord message board. You can get on there anytime you want. We got 4 handy tiers of patronage. You can get in for as low as $1, which is probably the best deal in all of mixed martial arts. If you think it sounds interesting, but you don't know if you want to dive in for free, we also offer 7-day free trials at our $5 patronage tier level. You can get in for that and see what content is happening over there. And then you take a look, decide if you want to jump on as a full-time member. Everybody knows we're not part of a big MMA website. We don't have a powerful parent company. We're a completely independent MMA podcast. Just two guys talking into a microphone, saying whatever we want, whenever we want, giving you the straight truth, not lying to you. We've been doing it for over a decade, and we can only keep making the show with your support, so help keep the CME alive by joining up with the awesome community over there at patreon.com/comainevent. Another great way to support the show is by going to comainevent.com and checking out our merchandise shop. Got that over there. Just go to the website, click the link at the top of the screen that says shop, and you'll be in there. We got all kinds of stuff. Coffee mugs. We got t-shirts. We got hoodies. We got hats. We got tote bags. We got damn beach towels if you want them, if that's what you want to get. Right now, I got to be honest with you, Ben, the top seller ever since Christmas has been the daddest man on the planet coffee mugs,
yeah,
which make a great gift for anybody in your life. They don't even have to be an MMA fan. You can give them the daddest man on the planet mug, and they'll probably be happy with it.
You know, it just makes sense. Anybody can look at that mug, know what it's about. I feel similarly, however, about the Are You Fucking Kidding Me mug.
That's
you don't
true.
You don't need to know anything about MMA to appreciate what's going on with a coffee mug that says, Are You Fucking Kidding Me on it?
I feel like the daddest man on the planet mug and the Are You Fucking Kidding Me mug give you two possible different directions that you could go with your mug.
And you know what?
Purchase.
You don't have to choose between them, because some days you wake up feeling like the daddest man on the planet. Other days, right. Jed, other days you need to know if these people are fucking kidding you out here.
That's right. You could get them both for all we care. Go to comainevent.com and click the link that says shop and bathe your eyes in the goodness. As always, we partner with our friends Studio Superconductor on the shop. They are a brand and design studio from Portland, Oregon. We can't recommend them highly enough for all your design needs. Hit them up over at studiosuperconductor.com or on Instagram at Studio Superconductor. We got music this week from our guy, Dion Rodriguez, a music producer from Deltona, Florida. If you like what you hear from him on the podcast, you can check out more over at soundcloud.com/dbeats7. And again, as you guys know by now, that's the word beats with a Z. Beats. It's kind of like Joe Pyfer, body bags. Yeah. Joe body bags. Pyfer
didn't end
with a
up
Z.
Needing any of those body bags over the weekend after all.
Didn't need to put anybody in a body bag. Three rounds as usual in the co-main event podcast. Round number one, Alexander Volkanovski carries the hopes of middle-aged men everywhere this weekend as he tries to hold off cocky young whippersnapper Ilya Topuria. Old man strength, let's go. And in round number two, silly little guy Paulo Costa enters the cage at UFC 298 for the first time since August 2022, and Bobby Knuckles unexpectedly faces a must-win. And in round number three, you have to admit, it's a little bit funny that the same week he brags about setting the hardest punch record at the UFC PI, Joe Pyfer can't even really stun Jack Hermanson. All that plus Are You Fucking Kidding Me and Just Saying Stuff. But first, like we always do about this time, let's do a little bit of listener mail.
Listener mail.
First piece of listener mail comes to us from Bill, and it references the fact that Alexander Volkanovski has embraced his old man status heading into this pay-per-view. He says, as connoisseurs of men of a certain age getting shit done in this sport, I thought we might take this moment to appreciate featherweight champion, pound-for-pound great, and owner of that spectacular dome piece, Alexander Volkanovski's faultless debut on the sketch comedy scene this past week. Gracefully accepting the aging process can't be easy to do, especially in such a young man's game, but not only is Volk accepting it, he's adding new strings to his bow every time we see him. He's pretty handy in the cage, is a thoughtful speaker, cooks up a mean steak, and now he turns in the greatest old guy comedy performance since John Mahoney. I don't know who that is, Ben. God bless you, Volk, and long may you blaze the trail as I kick and scream my way out of my early 20s, already feeling 5 years over the hill. Maybe it's not all behind me yet. First of all, early 20s, you are a child. You are a child in this world. You have no idea what it's going to be like 20 years from now, my guy. So hold on to it while you got it. But I have to enthusiastically co-sign the fact that Alexander Volkanovski turned in probably the best acting performance by an MMA fighter that we have ever seen, with apologies to people in the Never Back Down series, because he is out there with the comedic timing of a professional, the acting skills of an absolute pro, a veteran. And this video, where they go through basically a day in the life of old man Alexander Volkanovsky, is maybe the best MMA-related comedy sketch thing that I have ever seen. And yeah, there have been a surprising number of them. And this is hands down the best one for me.
There have been a surprising number of attempts. I agree with that. There's been a lot of people over the years who have tried to do something like this, but I agree. I don't know if I've ever seen anyone do anything better than this. It is, not only was it a great idea, the concept, all that stuff was great, the writing was perfect. It's essentially the same joke over and over again, but it's presented in different ways, and it's very fun to watch. It doesn't get stale at any point. But you're right, his comic timing, his delivery, all these stuff, it's absolutely perfect, to the point where it's like, man, if I'm GSP feeling pretty good about myself in a Captain America movie or in that Sports Center ad, and then I see what Alex Volkanovsky can do, I'd be like, okay, wait a minute, this guy's the real deal. They need to give this guy some more work to do in the acting realm. I also was struck, though, that this was not put out by the UFC. This was not an effort to promote this fight. This was a betting sponsor, like a sports book sponsor of his, that conceived this, put it together, executed all this. And it just makes me feel like, why does it take the sponsor to come up with a creative idea like this? Because I think the problem with the UFC being as successful as it has been is that you can't tell the UFC anything about how to promote a fight these days. They're absolutely sure that they know that they're just going to do the same thing. It has worked so far. We're a billion-dollar company, right? So, like, what we're doing must be working. Why would we need to do anything new? And it takes somebody else to come out with a little bit of innovation, trying to do something different, and it goes over great. Everybody loves it. You know, it just seems like, I guess we get so used to the UFC doing it always one way. The UFC gets used to that, and we don't even think about this kind of thing until you actually see somebody who is like trying. Like, that's what it is, really, is like somebody putting in the effort to think of some way to do this, and a clever, like, all the ingredients came together here great. Because if you had somebody who, you had this exact same idea written as well, and you had 90% of other MMA fighters who couldn't pull it off as well, it's not going to go as great. But like, here you have everything you need, and it's fantastic.
Yeah, I agree. And that leads us into this next question from Eric in Toronto, who writes, genuine question, where's all the UFC promotion? Other than the ads for UFC event that play during UFC events, I never see any. Figured it was because I'm up here in New Brazil. Haha, he means Canada. But I just got back from a 10-day vacation to Florida, and I didn't see a single ad or commercial the whole time. The one thing I did see was a stationary sign with the three big UFC letters in front of a diner that looked like it had easily been there for 10 years. Is the entirety of UFC promotion a few posters in Vegas and some tweets? Discuss. Thank you. This is some of the stuff you were just talking about. I feel like, well, first of all, I don't think the UFC feel like it needs to promote that much. I feel like it's got its captive audience. It gets these flat fees from ESPN that don't really, that take the lumpiness out of the business, as Ari Emanuel said once, and as we continue to repeat over and over again. So it doesn't matter to them, essentially, how many pay-per-views they sell. They get these flat fees from ESPN that takes the risk out of the business. They know that MMA fans are going to buy it. And if they can harness some of that mainstream attention when they can, they will. But I just don't feel like they need to go. They don't feel like they need to go out of their way to make a special charge or a special, you know, handshake out there to people to buy the pay-per-views. They just feel too bulletproof, too insulated, too safe, basically, and on the mountaintop. And Endeavor just wants to keep cranking the money horn and have the money keep flying out. And they don't feel like they need to do anything else.
Well, yeah. And I can see how from their perspective it looks that way, right? Because anytime, especially you go somewhere either new or somewhere that you haven't been in a little while, even when you're jacking up the ticket prices, like you're going to Toronto and bragging about how much more money you made than anybody else who's come to this building, you can get the fans to cheer for it. You can tell them, we are getting more of your money than anybody else who comes to this building and sets their ticket prices. And the fans will be like, yeah, you are, way to go. And so it's like, they, I'm sure, feel like, hey, what do we need to do? We're going to Anaheim, whatever. We haven't been there in a little while. It'll sell out, you know, it'll sell out before you even know what the full card looks like. And they're right. And the pay-per-view picture looks like, okay, you're going to get paid just for putting on the event. If it's especially successful, you get paid more, but you don't have to worry about it too much. And so I think about it sometimes as this antitrust lawsuit is ongoing, and about the argument to be made that the monopoly environment that the UFC enjoys is bad for kind of everybody but the UFC, like bad for the fighters, but also like bad for the fans. But it is in some ways not necessarily great for the UFC in terms of the product it puts out at time, because there's not a lot of incentive to try to do anything new or different, or to really like put your shoulder behind it to try to promote any of these events. You can just be like, here's the next numbered UFC event. And you know, there's enough people inside the MMA bubble who they're going to find out who's on these cards. They're going to already know. You don't have to do a whole lot of work to educate them on it. And you have that audience that's just used to being there on Saturday nights. So like, yeah, I can understand somebody feeling like I'm not seeing a whole lot of promotional push for some of these events. And yet, do you still not know about these events? You probably do. You know, yeah. If you're listening to the sound of my voice right now, you're probably in that market, that demographic where you do know what's going on.
We talked about this last week on the Patreon as it pertained to this Tatiana Suarez documentary that just came out on HBO, the Unbreakable Tatiana Suarez, which we both watched and, you know, gave our reactions to over on the CME Patreon Power Hour that comes out every Friday on the Patreon page. And it's another thing that the UFC just doesn't seem like it has even mentioned that or tried to promote it at all. When the fact is, if you have one of your athletes as the primary focus of a well-made professional documentary that is on HBO, a platform known far and wide for its quality product, you think you would want to tell someone about it. And it just doesn't seem like there's been much promotion for that at all. And I mean, I'm sure part of the reason for that is that the release of the documentary pretty much coincided with Tatiana Suarez having to pull out of yet another scheduled fight. She was going to fight Amanda Lemos at UFC 298 this Saturday. She had to pull out, and I'm sure that took a lot of the wind out of the sails of the promotion of that documentary. But if you're the UFC, you still just, you want to send out a press release, right? You want to shoot a couple tweets out there that are like, hey, here's a couple scenes from the Tatiana Suarez documentary. If you have Max, go stream it. I've seen a couple of articles from various places, but that's it. And you'd think this would be a bigger deal than it is.
Well, especially because the UFC comes off pretty well in that thing. There's even like a short segment that highlights what great care she's getting at the UFC Performance Institute. And like, that seems like the kind of thing you would want to make sure people knew.
All right, we'll do this last question from Rob Walden before we move on. He says, so Dana is once again resetting the expectations for when Conor is going to fight next, but he's still never really offered a reason why he can't book the fight now. So I ask you, what are your best theories for why the UFC can't book a Conor McGregor fight right now? Now, I feel like this is a pretty good question, because we do keep talking about how the UFC continually keeps pushing back this Conor McGregor fight. It was supposed to be last year. Then we heard it was going to be in the fall of last year. Then we heard in the spring of this year. Then Conor McGregor was out here teasing July or June 29th for International Fight Week. And then Dana White comes out last week when he is on the Pat McAfee show and says, hopefully this year, he says. And so they do keep pushing this thing back. And yet Conor McGregor is out here talking to Gareth Davies in the UK, saying he's fed up with waiting, that he wants to fight. Now, is that a smokescreen? We don't know. But that's what he's saying publicly. Michael Chandler is obviously wasting away on the damn vine waiting to get this Conor McGregor fight. If they told Michael Chandler, show up behind Safeway next Saturday, we're going to push a couple dumpsters together to make a barrier, and you guys are going to fight inside it while we illuminate it with the headlights of our trucks, Michael Chandler would be there. He'd do it.
He'd be there, Chad, 10 minutes early because on time is late, where Michael Chandler is used to training.
That's right. Michael Chandler would do it at the drop of a hat, and yet we can't do it. We can't get it done. We have UFC 300 in 2 months, the prime landing spot for Conor McGregor versus Michael Chandler as the main event, and we're talking about hopefully this year. So what the fuck, man? What is the holdup at this point?
Yeah, especially because nobody wants to provide any more information about it other than when it might possibly happen, and it's constantly changing every single time Dana White gets at. Like, I don't even know why we're still asking him and why people are taking it as seriously as they do when he gives an answer, because the answer has changed so many times. It was supposed to be, remember, by the end of last year. It was supposed to be in the fall of 2023, or at least before the end of 2023, certainly. And now already we're moving toward the end of this year. And it's like, when he got asked that question, the first part of his answer was, it was, when is Conor McGregor going to be back and fight? And the first thing he said was, eventually. And then, hopefully, by the end of this year. Like, that is not encouraging, really. Yeah. And the thing that he would say beforehand when people kept asking him about Conor McGregor is he would say, when Conor is ready to fight, we'll let you know. Kind of putting it on McGregor that one way or another, trying to say he's not ready. Either now, that in Dana White's terms could mean a lot of different things. It might mean he has not agreed to what we want him to do, and therefore we're going to say that must mean he's not ready. Or there's some other aspect of it that he's not ready for. It does seem weird that nobody on either side, especially if there's some disagreement between Conor McGregor and the UFC, you would think at some point, with it being drawn out as long as it has, that one of them would break a little bit and be like, here's the shit that's going on. Here's the holdup. Yeah. Even if that's not totally accurate. It's just usually in these things, somebody accuses somebody of something else, you know, at somewhere along the line. Conor McGregor has gotten a little closer at times. But you would think if he was mad about it by the end of the year last year, when he hears Dana White say, eventually, hopefully by the end of this year, it's not going to make you happier. It's going to make you think that like we're moving any closer to it. Like at this point, the shit is a mirage out there, just shimmering on the desert floor, always just ahead of us. And yet we never quite reach it. And how long can that go? How long can he keep just pushing it further and further along the hypothetical calendar before we stop asking or believing anything he says about it?
I mean, for a long time, the obvious guess was Conor needs to get off that gear, right? And he needs to get back with USADA, up to the point where the UFC essentially fired USADA because of, at least in part, its treatment of Conor McGregor, allegedly. But that time seems like it has probably passed, because we've been waiting a long time for that. And I guess the obvious next best guess is that it's a contract related thing, that it's monetary with Conor McGregor, which it can always be in a negotiation between the UFC and Conor McGregor. But at this point, we just don't know. And everyone involved keeps saying that they want it to happen. And it seems like there is prime real estate coming up for to drop this fight in there. And yet we're not going to do it, or we're allegedly not going to do it, which is, it's very strange. And so we will keep our ears to the ground for some Conor McGregor news that makes sense. That's going to do it for listener mail this week. If you have a question, comment, or concern that you want to air to the podcast in future weeks, you know how to do it. You go to the website, comainevent.com, click the link at the top right-hand corner of the screen that says email the podcast, and that'll get you in touch with us. As for right now, we're going to go ahead and get started with round number one.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block, it's only a serve, It's only a tackle, a run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Well, Ben, I wanted to mix in this listener mail that we got from the damn Grinch, who wrote in to say, entering UFC 298's main event, are the vibes off for Volk? All of a sudden, and perhaps uncharacteristically, we are starting to hear excuses. Drinking every day, mental issues, short notice as a reason for his last demise, which are valid, but he also cashed that paycheck. Ilya Topuria, in contrast, seems to have O'Malley versus Aljo, McGregor versus Aldo level confidence in victory. Does he know something we don't? Now, Ben, you interviewed Ilya Topuria this week for your column over there on Yahoo, and you sent me a text message about it that said, Ilya Topuria is a very confident dude. Now, you and I have both interviewed a lot of fighters over the years, and they are never not confident when you talk to them pre-fight. So what is it about Ilya Topuria that you feel like sets him apart from a very confident crowd in terms of his individual confidence?
It's very true. Ilya Topuria, that boy confident. He feels very, very strongly that this is not going to be even that close a fight. And that's the thing, I guess, that's surprising, because you go into a fight, the whole point is that you better think you're going to win, right? Like, otherwise, why would you accept it? It's a title fight. It's a big opportunity, biggest opportunity of his career thus far. So you expect him to be confident going in there. But to set expectations the way he has so high, to say beforehand, it's not even going to be close. People aren't going to want to see a rematch. I'm just going to blow this guy out of the water, and it's going to be easy. And I said that at some point to him where I was like, do you think that maybe you are doing yourself a disservice here? Because if you go out there now and you win a 5-round decision over Volkanovski, that would be super impressive for anybody to go out there and do. We haven't seen a featherweight be able to do it. And so if you could go out there and, you know, win 4-1 or 5-1 to none, take a decision home, become the new champion that way, we would normally be super impressed, unless you told us that you were going to completely obliterate this guy, and then it would seem like a step down. And he was absolutely adamant. He was like, no, that would be a failure for me if I beat him by decision. Like, I would not be proud of that. I would not be pleased with that. And I was like, but he's Alexander Volkanovski, dude. He's really good. Like, all the evidence we have suggests that he's one of the best featherweights that we've ever seen. One of the things I think, I tried to ask him about this, and this question did not go well, because, you know, you come in here undefeated in MMA, and we've seen that before. Guys tend to go one or two ways with it. One is to feel the pressure of that, especially if you get to a certain point and you're walking around undefeated and it becomes part of the storyline. Is this the one? Is this the guy to finally take your O? And you lose that, because we see so few undefeated fighters, especially higher up in the ranks after they've been in the sport. There's just so many ways to lose. The other way is to gain confidence from that, because for all you know, you cannot be beaten. It has not been proven that you can be beaten. And I had watched this clip of Dan Hooker talking about this, where he was saying when he was undefeated, it was a little easier to talk yourself into that feeling when you go into a fight and you feel like, of course I'm going to win. Like, I always win. So why wouldn't I win this one? And he's like, after you've been beaten, you still got to talk yourself into that feeling for the time that you're walking into the cage. You need that confidence, but you know, you have found out you can be beaten. It is a known fact. Other people have seen it too. And so it's harder to get yourself there. The mistake I made in trying to ask him about his thoughts on this quote and whether that was part of the psychology was even mentioning Dan Hooker's name. Because I was trying to say, like, I saw Dan Hooker make these comments, and then he was immediately like, fuck Dan Hooker. I don't want to hear about Dan Hooker. Next question. And I was like, well, okay, Dan Hooker's not important for the purposes of this question. And he's like, I don't give a shit about what Dan Hooker has to say about me. And I was like, he wasn't talking about you, man. He was just talking about that. Like, it was about him, his own experience. It wasn't about, and he was just like, next question. I don't want to hear about Dan Hooker. And I was like, well, okay, lesson learned here. I maybe should have gone about that one a little bit differently. But to hear Ilya Topuria tell it, and I was just trying to get to, like, how do you get this level of confidence, and what's the difference between confidence and arrogance when you get to this point. And he was like, the confidence comes from how hard I know I've worked and how well I know I have prepared. That's where it comes from. And him admitting at some point, he's like, I know Alexander Volkanovsky is really good and that it's going to take a lot to beat that guy. But I think that I actually have that thing. I'm reminded, Jed, of a line from the HBO Rome series where Julius Caesar, in laying out sort of his plan to sort of take over sole possession of power in Rome, and one of his underlings points out that it's nice for him to be so confident. Some might call it hubris, to which Caesar replies, it's only hubris if I lose. I think that meant that one. Feels like it applies here to Ilya Topuria. If he's this confident and he actually does this shit, we will be like, damn, there is a new king at 145 pounds. Ilya Topuria is that guy. If he goes out there and he loses, then it's going to be some LOL bro shit all over social media. He's going to get memed the fuck out of him. You know that. I know that. You got to think he knows that.
One time I made Dustin Poirier mad. Leading up to his fight with Khabib Nurmagomedov when he was the interim champion, because I tried to ask him a question about how meaningful the interim championship was to him. And what I said was, a lot of people say that the interim championship doesn't mean anything.
Oh boy.
That you have to beat the champ to be considered the champ. And his response was, who's saying that? To which I
said, he wanted you to name names.
Yeah, to which I said, like, no, not your interim championship specifically. Like, other people who have won the interim championship have historically said they need to beat the champion to be considered the actual champion. It didn't go over with the diamond. It did not go over with DP at all. So I know the feeling. As you mentioned, Ilya Topuria is undefeated, 14-0. But his wins, Ben Folks, his wins, let's say, over the last couple years, Ryan Hall, Jai Herbert, Bryce Mitchell, and Josh Emmett. Now, Josh Emmett obviously has come into his own in recent years, but that's a big step up, right, to go from those guys to Alexander Volkanovsky. Now, I know we're all talking about, oh, Volkanovsky is 35. You know, the last time we saw him actually defend the featherweight title was in the title reunification match against Yair Rodriguez in July of last year. But he's been pretty good. He had those two losses to Islam Makhachev, one of which was the short notice one at UFC 294 in October, the one that Eugene Behrman came out very recently and said we did not want him to take that. But he did, essentially for monetary reasons and you know, other personal reasons for Alexander Volkanovsky. But other than those two losses, this guy has been very good, right? Jose Aldo, Max Holloway, three times Brian Ortega, and the Korean Zombie prior to Yair Rodriguez, his most recent featherweight champion chip defenses. He is far and away the longest standing UFC champion at this point. And so, I don't know, man. This is one of those situations where if you want to convince me that Alexander Volkanovsky is old and doesn't have it anymore, I am going to need to see it with my own two eyes before I believe it.
Well, and I saw the big homie LT, Luke Thomas, in reply to this Alexander Volkanovsky video where he mentions right at the very beginning of the video, oh, they talk about this over 35 curse, and I'm telling you, it doesn't exist and everything. And I think Luke felt like maybe they were taking a shot at him for bringing up this idea. And he was like, right, quick to point out, listen, I never said curse. I never said that there's an over 35 curse. I said the statistics tell us that something changes, especially in these lighter weight classes, as we've seen for dudes at 35. And that we haven't seen them have a ton of success at that point and beyond. And it's not a superstition. It's not like anything I'm trying to say is like mystical or supernatural. It's math. It is an observable statistical phenomenon. And doesn't mean Alexander Volkanovsky couldn't still be good at 35, 36, 30. If there's somebody who could do it, I believe it's probably that guy. But it also is something that if you look at how it has gone for other people, it suggests that maybe there's something to it. But I agree with you that as much as I might think like, this could be a tough one. This could be where you hit a point and things start to change for you. I will also need to see it before I can totally believe it.
odds makers forecasting a pretty close fight. Alexander Volkanovsky just a slight favorite at minus 118. Ilya Topuria at minus 102. The odds say they like it to go over 3.5 rounds, so we'll see how that goes. But I mean, just skills-wise, I feel like it shapes up as a very fun fight. And, you know, this is one of the reasons why UFC 298 shapes up as a card that is comparable to what they wanted UFC 299 to be. And it is going down Saturday at the Honda Center in Anaheim, California. And I think this is one that is worth the money and worth watching because you have a pretty stellar supporting card behind Alexander Volkanovsky and Ilya Topuria for the men's featherweight championship. We will talk about that coming up in round two. Before we get there, though, Ben Fulks, let's do a little bit of Are You Fucking Kidding Me? Now, I know this week you and I have a joint Are You Fucking Kidding Me, which doesn't always happen, but this week there's a pretty clear direction to go in, and that is because Sean Strickland had himself a week. As usual at this point, we are getting very accustomed to basically a what did Sean Strickland do this week recap over here in the MMA media, and this past week was no exception. He went out there and battered a YouTube influencer, somebody named Sneeko.
That fellow by the name of Sneeko.
Yeah, as you said on Twitter, good try getting us to try to figure out who Sneeko is, but we're not going to bite on that one. We're not going to be out here trying to figure out who Sneeko is.
Nope.
So after Sean Strickland beats him up in the cage, he goes out to, I believe he was at a Power Slap event, and he has a little run in with Machine Gun Kelly. And then there's been some fallout for that. So we'll get into the specifics of that. But first, are you fucking kidding me, Sean Strickland? Can you not have just one week where you don't do some silly shit that then we have to talk about?
Yeah. And I mean, it first of all, the video I saw of him sparring the Sneeko fella, it seems several times people are trying to throw in the towel.
Yeah, multiple towels are flying all around.
There's just towels in the background constantly of this thing. And Sean Strickland is just going absolutely nuts on this guy trying to beat him up. I do have to kind of point out, though, that as hard as he went after this dude, could knock him out, it seems, which, are you fucking kidding me? We're going to go super hard at that streamer, and he's still going to be standing around there by the end of it, even after he ignored all the towel throws. So not exactly beating the Sean Strickland doesn't have knockout power allegations with that one. But also, when I see that Sean Strickland is out here beefing with Machine Gun Kelly,
yeah,
the same dude who Conor McGregor was out there beefing with at some other thing, my first thought was the MMA fighter fame life cycle is moving really fast with Sean Strickland. We're already to the beefing with Machine Gun Kelly part of it. A lot of people just found out who Sean Strickland was like 2 months ago, and now we're already to the beefing with Machine Gun Kelly phase. I mean, we skipped right over the fuck watch phase, right over the pinstripe suit that says fuck you on it. I don't even know if we're going to make it to the yacht phase, Jed.
Sean Strickland has never had a pinstriped suit in his life, let alone one that says fuck you all over it. I mean, I don't know how Machine Gun Kelly keeps getting himself into these beefs with UFC fighters, right? And it seems to in some ways continue to circle the fact that he is in a relationship with Megan Fox. Sean Strickland apparently didn't know this until after their confrontation, but UFC fighters seem to take some umbrage with that. Like, why is this tall nerd allowed to be with Megan Fox? But I gotta give Machine Gun Kelly some credit, because neither in these two altercations has he appeared to back down to the UFC fighter. Now, maybe it's because he is surrounded by personal security, but like in both his altercation with Conor McGregor and Sean Strickland, he has appeared to just have no problem going face to face with these dudes, which, good for you. Machine Gun Kelly, because seems like you're sort of taking your life into your own hands there. Another Are You Fucking Kidding Me for Dana White coming out after this thing is over at the Power Slap post-fight press conference, which is apparently a thing that happens, and essentially saying, you can't take Sean Strickland around humans without expecting him to have some manner of altercation, which, are you fucking kidding me? Isn't this guy supposed to be like your new big star kind of guy who up till very recently was your champion? And now you're going to be out here being like, no, you can't really take him out in public. I mean, that's not going to work. Just like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, I thought this guy's supposed to be a star for you.
Once again, we point out that back in like 2013 or whatever it was, when Matt Mitrione got himself in trouble exercising his free speech, the UFC put out the statement about how it expects all of its fighters to treat people with dignity and respect. And these days the guy can say whatever he wants, and hey, it's not his fault that he cannot be around human beings. We should expect this whenever he has to be around, you know, people.
Yeah.
Fucking kidding me?
Last point I will make before we move on from this is that, yes, Sean Strickland seems like a terrible person. No, he should not be getting into altercations face to face with Machine Gun Kelly. However, I'm easy to find, Vampire Man. It's actually a pretty funny thing to say. I'm kidding. Vampire Man. All right, that's going to do it for round number one. We'll be right back with round number two.
Well, Chad, here we are. It is the Monday before UFC 298. That means we are less than a week out. And as of now, all indications are that the silly little guy, Paulo Costa, actually intends to show up for this one. He told us with the message spelled out in rose petals that he was not going to pull out. So far, he has not. However, you know, there's still a fight week to go. There's still a weigh-in. Paulo Costa has been known to tell people that their own personal problem if he does not make weight. So who knows? But right now, seems like we're going to have ourselves a fight between Bobby Knuckles and the SLG Paulo Costa. I also couldn't help but notice today, Bobby Knuckles comes into this one as kind of a considerable favorite.
Yeah.
We're going to around a 2-1 favorite here for Robert Whittaker. What do you make of that? And what do you make of what this fight at this moment means for the career of one Robert Knuckles?
I mean, the fact that he's a big favorite probably has a lot to do with the inactivity, right, from Paulo Costa. We haven't seen him since he fought Luke Rockhold at UFC 278 in August of 2022. Previous to that, he had two straight losses. He lost to Israel Adesanya at UFC 253 in a middleweight championship fight. And then he tried to go up to light heavyweight to fight Mad Marv Vittori, and that did not work out. Even though Costa lost a point for an eye poke, and that one he lost by a unanimous decision. Previous to that, he beat Yoel Romero, Uriah Hall, and Johnny Hendricks back-to-back, so it's a pretty big step up in competition for him as well, or at least in fights that we've seen him win. And so I think that, you couple that with the inactivity, you probably get to the fact that he's going to fight a very good middleweight fighter in Robert Knuckles, and you probably get around to him being an underdog. Now, plus 185, I might think about it. If I were a betting man. And Paulo Costa, you'd think, is going to have some physical advantages here against Robert Whittaker. So, I mean, I don't think it's an open and shut case that Paulo Costa is necessarily going to lose this thing. But for Robert Whittaker, as I said at the top of the show, seems like a bit of a must win if you yourself aren't getting any younger at 33 years of age, and you come in here having lost two of your last three, including to Israel Adesanya. It is Israel Adesanya and the current champ, DDP, but you sandwiched in a win there over Mad Marv Vittori also. So I don't know if, you know, Whittaker is always going to be a great fighter in this division, however long he wants to stick around. He's always going to be a guy who might be on the periphery of the title picture. But if you're interested in getting a rematch with DDP, if you're interested in being in the immediate conversation, yeah, you absolutely have to win this one, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's easy for us to sort of trick ourselves into thinking that Robert Whittaker is on the downside of his career just because, you know, he was champ. It feels like a few years ago now. I mean, it was a few years ago, but like he hasn't been champ for a little while, and we start to feel like he's fading a little bit from the top of that title picture, whereas for a while there, he was always a perennial contender. It felt like somebody you could plug in to a UFC middleweight title fight at kind of any given time. But we also do have to remind ourselves that since he moved to middleweight after he was starting out in the UFC as welterweight, his entire career at middleweight in the UFC, he's only lost to two people. Yeah. Israel Adesanya and Dricus du Plessis. And God damn it, if I'm being honest with myself, Chad, I still can't tell you I would pick against him if he were to rematch DDP. I was shocked that he lost that one. Even after seeing him get TKO'd by Dricus du Plessis, I'd still pick Robert Whittaker if they were to rematch tomorrow. So I still think overall, just as a complete package, Robert Whittaker is really good. He does so many things well. He's such a smart fighter. He makes good mid-fight adjustments. It's really hard for me to sit here, look at what we've seen him do and say, you know, the best days are behind him. But if you do lose to Paulo Costa, who has mostly treated the last few years of his career as a lark, this is a thing that he is just fucking around with, that won't be a great sign. And it will put you so far from that conversation at the top where already you face the barrier of you've got a very recent loss to the current champion. You kind of need the title to change hands. But even if it does, you know, if DDP fights Israel Adesanya next, either way, it works out. The champion is somebody who has wins over Robert Whittaker. So you already have that barrier. If you hope to one day be back up there again, you kind of do have to beat Paulo Costa. Whereas Paulo Costa comes into this fight, and if he just shows up, we'll be kind of impressed. If he shows up and does anything fun and weird in the fight, win or lose, we'll be like, LOL, that guy. That guy, Paulo, he's fun to have around. God forbid he goes out there, maybe lands one of these hammers on Robert Whittaker's chin, knocks him out. It'll be a huge deal for Paulo Costa. He somehow doesn't have to win this one to continue the Paulo Costa bit.
Better to win than lose, as I have always
generally,
said.
Generally, yeah.
But yeah, you might be right about that. Pretty good supporting card here at UFC 298, as I mentioned a few minutes ago. Jeff Neal against Ian Machado. Gary. Mirab Dwalishvili against Henry Cejudo in a men's bantamweight fight, which I feel like is really flying under the radar, given kind of how interesting it could be. And then you got Anthony Hernandez versus Roman Kopliov. If you're Ian Machado, Gary, this is one that, number one, like Paulo Costa, you got to show up for, right? Because you were scheduled to fight Vicente Luque back at UFC 296, and you had to pull out. There was a lot of kind of questions and rumors about why you did that. It eventually came out that it was pneumonia, which, hey, man, if you're going to pull out, pneumonia is not a bad reason. There's been a lot of criticism on him for his pre-fight trash talk, some of which has been with Jeff Neal. These guys were supposed to fight back at UFC 292, but it was Jeff Neal that had to pull out at that point. He was replaced by Neil Magny, and Gary won that fight. But, you know, Gary is a guy who comes in with a lot of expectation that he's going to be a welterweight title contender. Obviously, I guess you could argue, understands how to play the media game here and there, but you got to win this one. You got to make it to the cage, and you got to win this one, preferably in impressive fashion, if you are Ian Machado, Gary, right?
Yeah. Yeah, because there's a whole lot of people waiting around to say some shit about you if you don't. You do really need to go out there and show out here.
What about Mirab and Cejudo? Well, that's an interesting fight, right? Like, this is one that...
Super, yeah.
That I feel like maybe we should be here. I know it's just the start of fight week, so we will hear more, but I feel like this is one we should be hearing a little bit more about.
Well, the main thing that I've heard about this is you see that Henry Cejudo, they had this thing on camera of him replacing his coach, Eric Albarracin, also known as the dude with the glasses. You know who the hell he is if you've been watching the sport, because you have found yourself being like, who is this guy with the glasses? Yeah. It's Eric Albarracin, and who Henry Cejudo was telling him, changing up everything in this camp, and that includes replacing him as a coach. And, you know, he was very cool about it, which seemed like maybe like the point of what we were doing there and showing it on camera. But yes, yeah, stylistically, that's a super interesting fight. It also seems like the kind where we are intent on finding out if Merab Dzhalashvili is going to be a guy. Because if you go out there and you beat Henry Cejudo, especially, you know, the kind of style that we've known that, that Henry Cejudo brings, how it might match up against Merab's style. If he can still do the Merab stuff to Henry Cejudo, granted, gentleman of a certain age at this point, but still, if he can do his shit to Henry Cejudo, well then, damn it, who can't he do it to? And that will be the question. Like, that's how you set that up as a thing where it seems like a dude headed for a title shot. Whereas for Henry Cejudo, if you were serious about you want this comeback to really be something, you got to win this one. And this is a tough one for Henry Cejudo, I think.
Absolutely cold-blooded for Henry Cejudo to fire Eric Albarracin on the UFC Countdown show.
I mean, it seemed like maybe we had had a conversation about it beforehand, right?
You that think maybe he was tipped? The cap.
I don't think that it was. He was hearing it for the first time because he was very cool about it. You know.
Well, maybe it was. I'm going to break up with you in a public place, so you can't make a big scene about it. Kind of a thing from Henry Cejudo.
I don't think so. I think the way I think it was. Hey, we're going to do this. We're going to make it a part of the narrative, and also like. You being super cool about it is going to reflect well on you, and everybody comes out here looking like a winner. The odds right now I'm looking at for this one, Chad, Henry Cejudo, a slight underdog at plus 170. I don't know. That sounds kind of right to me.
Yeah.
Merab Dzhalashvili at minus 175. I lean toward Merab on this one. And yet at the same time, if there is somebody out there, even at 37 years old, who can be a good test for whether that Merab style, the same style he uses on pretty much everybody, whether he can really do it on everybody. Henry Cejudo is a pretty good test of that. I mean, I remember Ray Longo saying that that's what the reason Merab is the easiest dude to train and coach is because you don't have to worry about game plan. He's just going to do the same thing every time. I'm just going to see if you can stop it.
Yeah. Anthony Hernandez and Roman Kaplyov, those guys will probably swang them thanks. And then you got Amanda Lemos versus Mackenzie Dern, a heavyweight scrap between Marcos Rogério de Lima and Justin Taffa. So some fun stuff on UFC 298. If you got a free Saturday night and you're sitting on a bankroll, you may want to watch this one. I don't know. We'll see. All right, that's going to do it for round number two. We'll be right back with round number three. Well, Ben, the UFC seemed like they were pretty high on some Joe Pyfer shit headed into this middleweight main event against Jack Hermanson at the Apex during Saturday night's Fight Night event. Joe Pyfer went off as a considerable favorite. He is the 27-year-old phenom knockout artist. You can understand why the UFC might have its head turned by that a little bit, going in there against 35-year-old Jack Hermanson, a guy who seemed to have his best moments a few years ago and has since been on a lose one, win one situation since 2019, came in fresh off a loss in December of 2022 against Roman Dolidze, and was kind of expected to be a stepping stone here, I think, for Joe Pyfer in Joe Pyfer's march to contender status. And if that were the case, nobody sent Jack Hermanson the memo, because he went out there in the first couple of rounds and accepted Joe Pyfer's best punches and then essentially did some wild, wily veteran shit over the last three rounds, ended up winning this fight in a fairly clear-cut manner, and best laid plans, I guess. Best laid plans for your boy Body Bags did not work out this time around.
Yeah, I wrote this on Twitter while watching the fights, but it felt to me as the fight went on, one of those guys came there thinking, we're going to have ourselves five full rounds and it's going to be gritty and ugly and you're going to have to tough it out and go take this one. And the other guy came in there thinking, quick night of work and then we're going to go celebrate. And it looked like it was going that way. In the first round, Joe Pyfer is lighting him up. landing these clean shots, landing that left hook, landing the right hand behind it, and was tagging Jack Hermanson, and it seemed like it was only going to be a matter of time. And Jack Hermanson, to his credit, stayed calm, took some of those shots, but then just managed to take the momentum away and get that forward pressure going. And you could see when Joe Pyfer was the one coming forward and throwing, and Jack Hermanson was little more than a target, he looked great. And then once Jack Hermanson started pressuring him back, pushing him back against the cage, walking him down, throwing that jab, and kicking his calf, especially kicking that leg, then it turned into a different fight. Like, the body language of Joe Pyfer changed. It just seemed a lot less confident, a lot less active. You could hear it in his corner, too, them telling him, like, you're letting him take this fight from you. And he just didn't seem to have an answer once things started going not so great anymore.
Yeah, he seemed to really be bothered by that punch to the eye, which he thought was an eye poke first, you know. Didn't, as you said, seem to get it together since then. And I don't know, man, like, we got this question from our guy. Let me make sure I get this name correct, because I wouldn't want to get this one wrong. Puffin on Zooties. Wrote in to say, well, I'm just going to have to be the guy that kicks a man when he's down, but where was that record-setting power greater than Francis Ngannou, let him tell it, from Joe Pyfer on Saturday night against prancing Jack Hermanson? Aside from having Dana White privilege, do you think he has the tools to rebound? And then he says, P.S., have you noticed that all those Philly guys from the same camp have questionable cardio and striking that led them to being finished or losing the deciding round in their fights? Jeremiah Wells, Sean Brady, Pat Sabatini, and Pyfer. I think this is an interesting question of whether or not Pyfer has the proper skills to compete at middleweight at the top level. Obviously, he's got that power. He's got kind of, well, what we thought coming into this fight was game-changing, mind-altering power. But Jack Hermanson, and granted, there was a couple times in these first two rounds where it looked like maybe Pyfer was on the verge of putting him out. But, like, honestly, Jack Hermanson didn't seem that bothered by it. And so that makes me wonder, do you need a more rounded skill set for Joe Pyfer if you can't really hurt Jack Hermanson with your hands and you can't take him down as you've been able to do in other fights?
How justified do the unnamed nerds who doubted Joe Pyfer's punching power feel right now? Because he had a lot to say about those nerds who didn't understand science. Still unclear to me who the nerds were.
Yeah.
If they were the guys working at the Performance Institute, or if they were people on the internet doubting that he deserved it. No idea. No idea who the nerds were. But if you felt that he was naming you among the nerds, and then you go out there and you're like, man, you landed those clean shots on Jack Hermanson, he ate them and came for you. So, score one for the nerds on that.
Yeah. I do want to point out that after this was over, it's another one where I want to make sure I get the quote exactly right. Joe Pyfer came to the post-fight press conference and said, for my haters, suck a fat dick. I wasn't supposed to be in here anyway. I give it 100% every time and we'll make adjustments and we'll be back. Thank you to all my sponsors. Yeah, I'm sure the sponsors are super happy right now, but thank you to everybody that supports me. Good job, Jack. So, gonna beef with the nerds pre-fight, tell the nerds suck a fat dick in the post-fight. Starting to get a picture, starting to have a picture painted for us of who our guy Joe Pyfer is. Body bags.
Also seems like he, you know, not to make excuses or anything, but was saying he had done a lot of media
that had worn him out. Yeah, seemed like he was against it at the time. Don't know about that. Don't know about that at all. Jack Hermanson goes out there in the cage, calls out Nasruddin Imavov, which I saw some people making jokes about this, about how, you know, Dana White goes from frowning to smiling when he realizes Joe Pyfer just lost, but he can book Jack Hermanson versus Nasruddin Imavov at the Apex in a few months. I mean, I would take it. Jack Hermanson seems to be out here very polite also.
Yeah.
Jack Hermanson, at least by the standards of this sport. Jack Hermanson seems to be casting himself as a bit of a gatekeeper here. These young guys want to make it to the top, you got to go through the Jack Hermanson gate, which so far seems a little harder than maybe we thought it was going
to
be.
I mean, he's done this a couple times now, you know, did it to Edmund Shabazian, now he's done it to Joe Pyfer, has proven like he might not blow you away on tape when you look at athletically what he can do. He definitely wasn't the faster fighter here as this one started. It looked like he was facing some athletic deficiencies against Joe Pyfer, but just by God, got it done. Has that veteran savvy, can wait through the hard parts of the fight and still have something for you. That's a dangerous guy against people who are still kind of on their way up and are maybe a little bit untested.
All right, let's do Just Saying Stuff, and then we will get out of here for this week. Ben, what is your Just Saying Stuff?
Well, Chad, I don't know if you saw this clip of Donald Cerrone showing up at at Dana White's Power Slap event, or as he was referred to by the woman interviewing him, the legendary Donald Cerrone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's the way to let us know that you totally know who this is. But while he was out there offering praise, Chad, praise for Power Slap, this is what he had to say about it. Quote, "I love it. This is like if you just want to watch knockout, 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 and hear CTE brain damage, this is the event." So I guess this week I'm just saying, if I'm Dana White, here's where I maybe get in Donald Cerrone's ear and be like, stop helping. You are saying stuff right now that is going to end up in a lawsuit. You're going to be quoted in a lawsuit 5 years from now. Out here being like, this thing is awesome. I can actually see and hear the brain damage that these people are receiving, and I love it. I'm just saying, it's maybe not the praise you think it is.
Just and yet, saying.
He's also not wrong, so there's that.
Well, Ben, we talked just a few minutes ago about the return of Henry Cejudo. He retired back in 2020, came back to lose that split decision to Aljamain Sterling at UFC 288 last May. So it's important for him to get back out there and maybe notch a win if he can against Merab Dwalishvili. Here's what I was thinking this week, though. Given the general level of discourse coming out of MMA fighters these days, I guess I'm just saying, remember when everybody used to hate Henry Cejudo because we thought he was just like kind of annoying? Like, remember when we just didn't like him because he embraced being the quote unquote king of cringe and made all kind of lame jokes? Remember when we used to kind of make fun of him because he was short or because he would bring custom made pillows for his opponents? We thought he was corny. I'm just saying, right now, give me 1,000 kings of cringe over Sean Strickland trying to keep women in the kitchen and showing up to beef with Machine Gun Kelly. Give me 1,000 kings of cringe over Joe Pyfer telling me to suck a fat dick. I know Henry Cejudo is a Trump supporter, just like seemingly every other MMA fighter. Just give me 1,000 Henry Cejudos before you give me one more Colby Covington. Honestly, I'm just saying, we could do a lot worse right now than to get back to Henry Cejudo making a bunch of terrible dad jokes. Not even kidding. I'm just saying.
Just saying.
Also, do you follow Merab Dwalishvili on the social medias? Because he's funny. He is a low-key funny follow as far as fighters go. He's constantly putting out the funny videos. So it's a pro tip. Pro tip this week is if you want to go follow Merab Dwalishvili.
He just got a follow from me. There you go.
All right, that's going to do it this week for the Co-Main Event Podcast. We're over on the Patreon page all week. Join us over there, patreon.com/co-main-event. Join in the fun. As for right now, thanks for listening, everybody. We are done. We are through. We are out.
What do you think the custom pillow situation is going to be for Cejudo this week?
I mean, I just hope the custom pillow economy wasn't killed by the pandemic. I hope that we can still get ourselves some custom pillows, you know, if we want to.
Well, I feel like if anybody was single-handedly supporting that economy, it was Henry Cejudo. I mean, they probably are glad to have him back in the game out there actively fighting, because there's a danger if he stays home too much, it doesn't just encounter people to whom he might gift pillows of their own faces. The whole industry could die.
Well, you know, Marab, he's always out there in the sort of traditional Georgian headdress. Mm-hmm. You know, he's got the traditional garb. A lot of times he'll have sort of like a Viking knife with him over on his Instagram and his Twitter. So I feel like he would make a cool pillow. Like, yeah. you get a headshot of Marab wearing one of those hats, and that's a dynamite pillow you might want to hand this guy at the weigh-ins. That'd be great. A
lot of pillow potential.